all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing it and drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Welcome in to White Sox Weekly, September 14th, 2024. White Sox and A's coming up at Guaranteed Rate Field a little bit later tonight. Welcome into the show, everybody. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. We've got our Sox crawl going on in the outfield concourse right now. Everybody's packed in there celebrating halfway to St. Patrick's Day. And the Sox crawl here at the ballpark. Man, we have had fantastic weather here the last couple of days. It looks like we'll have a good weekend here the rest of the way through this A's series, and hopefully the White Sox can get off this losing streak here at Guaranteed Rate Field. They've lost 15 in a row at the rate and are very much looking forward to snapping that streak, hopefully against the A's tonight. White Sox lost yesterday's ball game 2-0, another shutout. This time at the hands of the A's. Not much going for the White Sox offensively last night, though there were some chances that went by the wayside. We'll talk about last night's game a little bit here this afternoon. The White Sox did get another good start from Garrett Crochet, although good starts from Garrett Crochet look different here since the All-Star break. We'll spend some time talking about that as well here in the first segment of the show. Also coming up on the show later this afternoon, White Sox general manager Chris Getz spoke with White Sox beat reporters earlier in the week, and we'll bring back some of that conversation. Obviously, that's big news anytime the general manager speaks, and Getz had a lot to say about the upcoming, you know, big picture items for the White Sox, the coming offseason, some, you know, all that kind of future looking stuff, which is incredibly important given the White Sox are 33-115 on the season, and what's next matters maybe just as much, if not more, than anything going on, you know, currently in the minutia of the White Sox. Though there are some debuts here that have happened recently and will happen in the next couple of days that I think will be pretty entertaining for White Sox fans, especially those of you who are pretty locked in on the prospect side of things. And even for those of you who aren't locked in on the prospect side of things, that's what makes debuts so much fun, right? You see a guy like Sean Burke or perhaps Jake Eater in the next couple of days coming up to make his major league debut, or in the case of Burke, having already made his debut, set to make his first MLB start tomorrow afternoon against the A's. If you haven't been keeping up with the prospects in the White Sox system, now these guys are wearing White Sox pinstripes, and Len and DJ will tell you all about them throughout the day of the broadcast, and you get to learn kind of in real time and while the guy is pitching in these instances about the prospect, about the player, and kind of where he fits in the grand scheme of things. We'll talk about Burke and we'll talk about Eater, both recently called up to the White Sox, and both of them being definitely pieces for the White Sox long-term view of things. Speaking of pitchers that fit directly into the White Sox long-term view of things, White Sox first-round pick Hagen Smith, the fifth overall pick out of the University of Arkansas, was our guest. He was our guest here on the show. We talked to him a few days ago when he was here at the ballpark just to make his visit and get introduced to White Sox beat reporters and see everything and smell everything and hop on the broadcast with Len and DJ and whatnot, did the whole deal. I got a chance to talk with Hagen a little bit just about the journey that he's been on and, you know, who he is as both a person and a pitcher. There's a good conversation with him. Really smart dude, too, when it comes to pitching. I guess what I'm learning here over the last 2, maybe 3 years or so is that regardless of the program you come from, in the case of Arkansas, obviously a really big and wealthy program when it comes to baseball finances, and that matters when it comes to pitchers specifically, is that regardless of kind of where you come from, either if you come from an Arkansas type spot or whether you come from a smaller school, a D2 college, a JUCO, or whatever it is, you've had some background, some schooling, I think, in terms of the advanced metrics, the pitch arsenal stuff, the pitch effects, the edgetronic, the spin rates, the data, the velocities. And that's not saying that each one of these pitchers is totally new school, all sabermetrics, got to have every data I can find going into my start. Far from it, but they're all conversant in some of those things. They all know how to talk about it. They all know what matters for them. And that's a really interesting thing for me. You know, I come at baseball from, you know, from the data side of things, having played at best very badly up until the early parts of high school. And then the game kind of said, well, Connor, we think you're done. Maybe just go talk about it and try and be good at that for a little while. And I think being, you know, the kind of guy that comes to it at baseball from a data side of things, I always, when getting into conversations with players, kind of slow play a little bit that data side of the conversation, that sabermetrics or analytics part of the conversation, because you never know what a player is going to be into or conversant in when it comes to that side of things. And I'm finding out over the last 2 years or so that whether it's a guy like Davis Martin, who, you know, kind of fits the bill of coming from a smaller school, or certainly not Arkansas anyway, or Hagen Smith, the number 5 overall pick and maybe the best left-hander, maybe the best left-handed pitching prospect in all of baseball, you know, Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith, those are the two guys, and both of them in the White Sox system, the two lefties that most prospect evaluators see as the top guys in the minors right now, even though Hagen Smith just got drafted this last year. They know how to talk about that side of the game and about what that means for their arsenals and how they attack hitters. So, you know, that's kind of what we're looking for here as we get started on White Sox Weekly. You'll hear from Chris Getz. You'll hear from Hagen Smith. And we want to hear from you as well. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. And I guess, you know, the question has been, what are you most looking forward to for the White Sox here? You know, for a few weeks now, that is the case. That is the situation with the 33-115 record. What I'm most looking forward to is the White Sox getting on a roll here and avoiding that 121st loss and getting themselves into a situation in and around the 1962 Mets. That's very much on my mind, as I think it has been on most of baseball's mind here over the last few weeks with the results coming in the way that they have. I have also really looked forward to, like we've talked about here for the last couple of minutes, the debuts and continued starts of some of these pitchers. I think having watched them and kind of seen that depth in the White Sox overall system, that's what's got me pretty excited. And I think when it comes to determining the long-term future of this organization, the goal, or I guess maybe even better put, the task that's going to be attached to Getz and Bannister and Barfield, the guys in that front office, Jin Wong and others, it's going to be finding out which of those pitchers are guys that are going to be part of the organization for the long term, and which of those pitchers are going to be best served by trades. Not just for the White Sox. You know, not just like, okay, can we spin this guy off to wherever and pick up some big-time players? Because I guess that's part of it, right? And that's how we approach it from the outside looking in, whether you're playing MLB The Show or your fantasy baseball, your dynasty league or whatever. You want to win a trade, right? You want to fleece somebody else, preferably your friends, so that you can hold it over them for the rest of that dynasty league, however long it may run. I get it. Been there. But I think nowadays, especially when it comes to, you know, the homogenization of baseball and general managers for the most part throughout the game kind of using the same sorts of information, the same sorts of data, the same kinds of evaluation on players, we're a long ways away from, you know, the Moneyball era where you could find a player that didn't look like, wasn't shaped like, or didn't do the same things that other guys did, but got the same kind of results. We all kind of, for the most part, see players in the same way, and I think organizations over the last 5 years and into the next 5 are really going to set themselves apart by zigging where others zag and finding out the little things, the inefficiencies in and around the marketplaces that can get them the upper hand. That said, the White Sox are going to have to find, you know, in these trades over the coming, you know, 6, 8, 12 months, fits that will work for both sides of the equation, because that homogenization, that similar approach to evaluating prospects and players does exist. And that's kind of the challenge, I think, in today's baseball when you are trying to rebuild the franchise as the White Sox are going from 2024 to 2025. As for what's going to matter most here in the next 6 months, it is obviously, and I feel like we've done this on White Sox Weekly, I think, each of the last 3 weeks, and that's because Saturday afternoon's show has come right after a start from White Sox ace Garrett Crochet. He started again last night, a Friday night outing. He went 4 innings, he gave up one, he walked none, and he struck out four. And about halfway through his start, after the second inning, he gave up a double down the line to J.J. Bleda for the first base runner of the night. Bleda kind of inside out at a pitch and hit a hard ground ball past the third baseman, Miguel Vargas, and got an extra bases, and then he went out and got Jacob Wilson to fly out to center field to end the inning. He would give up one run on a couple of, some cheap contacts, probably had a pitch go against him, against Daz Cameron with two out in the inning. Daz Cameron got an infield single. Zach Geloff doubled, and that was the one run against Garrett Crochet. He gets the loss and goes to 6-12 on the year. He did drop the earned run average from 383 to 378, so at least that's headed in the proper direction. But the win-loss record goes to 6-12 for Crochet after the loss 2-0 to the A's last night. Now, for Crochet, about halfway through that start, as I mentioned, Len kind of looked at it and was pointing out while Garrett was pitching that the stuff looked a little bit firmer than it had in other starts. So I checked the Baseball Savant data during the outing, and sure enough, the fastball, the cutter, and the slider all up about a mile per hour, given Crochet's yearly averages, right? About a mile over his yearly averages. For the changeup, though, it was about 2 miles an hour harder last night for Crochet than it was than it has been in his season averages. And, some of that's going to skew a little bit one way or the other. He hasn't used a ton of changeups this year. He didn't use a ton of changeups last night relative to, guys who throw a lot of changeups. But then again, Garrett Crochet's kind of, in a weird way, a work in progress in that this is still his first year, and he's talked about these last few starts of the season being starts where he can widen the arsenal some and get to that slider and get to that changeup, as opposed to being just a fastball cutter guy that was, albeit very effective for him in the first half of the season, but certainly wants to be a bit more because he's capable of being a bit more. I don't know whether those velocities, that uptick in miles per hour was because of one thing or another. But he did come into the start last night with 191 strikeouts. He got four, which makes it 195. That also means that Garrett Crochet is 5 strikeouts away from becoming just the 11th pitcher in White Sox franchise history to strike out 200 batters. There have been 26 seasons where a White Sox pitcher has struck out 200 or more, but 10 different pitchers have done it. At least, I'm pretty sure it's 10. I did do that math on my own a little bit earlier this afternoon, and my math is always subject to review by someone smarter than I am. But even still, you look at the all-time strikeout number for the White Sox in a single season, it's Chris Sale having struck out 274 back in 2015. The next 4 highest totals in franchise history, and this makes sense when you think about it, they're all Ed Walsh. And that's coming from 1908 to 1912. Old Ed Walsh made a lot of starts in 1908 and 10 and 11 and 12, which means there's going to be a lot of strikeouts. Walsh was also a very good pitcher, especially for his day and in some specific seasons. Anyway, 2, 3, 4, and 5 on the leader list for White Sox single-season strikeouts, Ed Walsh from 1908 to 1912. Number 6 on that list is also Chris Sale, 233 in 2016. 2019 saw Lucas Giolito throw 228 strikeouts. And then 2 seasons of Dylan Cease kind of round out the top 10. Cease with 227 and then 226 in 2022 and 2021. Chris Sale also had a 226 strikeout season in 2013. Those are your top 10 seasons. Gary Peters, another Dylan Cease season. Javi Vasquez in 2007 with 213 strikeouts. Wilbur Wood had that 1971 season where he struck out 210. Tom Bradley, who I had to go back and look up, 1972, 209 strikeouts. Chris Sale with another appearance on this top strikeouts, top single season strikeout list for the White Sox, 209 in 2014. Esteban Loaiza had a 207 strikeout season in 2003. I believe that was an all-star campaign for him. If not, it was 2002. I'm looking at the strikeout list right now. Tom Bradley again in 1971. Ed Walsh in 1907. Gary Peters, Lucas Giolito. Alex Fernandez had 200 strikeouts in 1996. And Javier Vasquez had 200 strikeouts in 2008. Chris Sale looking to put his name on that list of White Sox pitchers to strike out at least 200. And what's pretty remarkable, I think, about Crochet's season is that if I would have told you that he had 200 strikeouts, I think you would have told me that he somehow got himself to around 170, 180 innings of work. I think you may have said that. At least, I know a good majority would have. But Crochet's going to get this done throwing something like 145 innings. He went four last night, which puts his total in 30 starts at 138 innings. I figure probably two starts left, maybe three for Crochet. The White Sox haven't officially announced the plan for Garrett for the rest of the season. But I would also argue that if you're able to get to plateaus like that, And maybe this is me connecting dots that don't exist with lines that are poorly formed and a marker that's running out of ink, right? I was doing a little connect a dot and drawing with my daughter this morning. So if I've got markers and doing connect the dots on my brain, that's the reason why, if you think that's a strange connection. But anyway, if I'm just kind of loosely connecting it and saying, hey, look at that, it's an actual picture. I get it. Maybe I'm conspiracy theorying a little bit here. But listen, 200 strikeouts would be a heck of a plateau, a milestone for Crochet to reach. And maybe you consider that the success of the year. Maybe you consider that something where you go, all right, check that box, maybe done for the year. You feel good about putting it away for the rest of the season. I certainly wouldn't blame him for doing so, and I certainly wouldn't blame him for coming out throwing a little bit harder last night, knowing that he was in reach of it. Garrett Crochet is more than capable, and he's done it before, of striking out nine in a four-inning outing and getting himself really close. I mean, shoot, nine probably would have, yes, 191, that would have done it last night. So I think about all those things, and Darren talks about it a lot on the broadcast. This season, obviously, is not going to end in the playoffs. It's not going to end the way they wanted to in terms of wins and losses. It's going to take a real good run here to feel any kind of solid about the last couple of weeks. We'll read in the next segment the statement that White Sox chairman Jerry Reinsdorf put out about the year not too long ago. However, what it's about now the rest of the way is individual players finding individual goals that they can set and then even perhaps reset for themselves when they reach them throughout the last 2 weeks of the year. It's been that way for a few weeks now. And if that's that goal for Garrett Crochet, great. So be it. Go get it. God be with you. It's been a lot of fun to watch him pitch all season long. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on the show. When we come back, I'll read you that statement from Jerry Reinsdorf. It came out just a few days ago. It is meaningful when the chairman speaks, and we will read those words to you on the other side of a quick break. I'm Connor McKnight. You got White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The ESPN Chicago Triple Play AM FM HD and app.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox fans, lock in your 2025 ticket plan today. Get access to the best seats, the best value, the biggest matchups, opening day on Thursday, March 27th, and much more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. White Sox and A's coming up tonight. A 6-10 start. It'll be Chris Flexen for the White Sox and JT Ginn for the A's. It is so weird for me to be watching this A's ball club, and I would imagine that this has been the case for everybody who does, you know, whatever it is, Reds Weekly or, you know, the analog all throughout baseball, watching the Oakland A's come through their town for the final time in Oakland A's history. I don't go back to the, you know, the Philadelphia A's, the Kansas City. It's always been Oakland for me. You know, obviously having come up through high school during that whole, you know, 2002 A's run, the Barry Zito of it, the Zito, Mulder, and Hudson, the Eric Chavez and Miguel Tejada. I mean, this was all really meaningful baseball to me as a youngster, having watched those teams in the playoffs and seen Oakland Coliseum be what it is and hear the, you know, horror stories, really, you know, kind of the war stories from Oakland Alameda and kind of understanding what that was. I had the good fortune, have had the good fortune here the last couple of years, and I really do consider it good fortune for whatever reasons over the last few years, whether it was Jason in the past or John here this season, they'd both been able to, or had both taken some time off when the White Sox happened to go out and play the A's, which meant I slide into one chair or the other and get a chance to travel with the team and call a couple of games. And I remember one of my first road trips. My first was Baltimore, and one of the next was the Oakland trip. And I was really excited to go see that park, despite the fact that you read so much about how much work that park needs and how close it is to default, and kind of ripping apart at the seams, I guess. But I consider myself really lucky to have been able to call a game from Oakland Coliseum, to see baseball in that space that, you know, had so many all-time moments happen in it, that has so much history to it, that really captivated so many Oakland fans, so many A's fans over the last decades. And you could really feel, having been there the last couple of years, and Oakland fans really kind of understanding that the writing was on the wall, holding out a little bit of hope, but understanding the writing was on the wall that this team was going to move one place or another. It was fairly heartbreaking, you know, to kind of watch and be there. You know, the Oakland A's had had a few reverse boycotts, right, where the A's fans had actually shown up to games in droves. I mean, big packed houses at Oakland Coliseum, showing that team, that ownership, that we are fans and we are here and we just want some good baseball to root for. It was really interesting to kind of, you know, be there and kind of be around that, and knowing that this is the last time that the Oakland A's will be here in Chicago facing the White Sox is really kind of mind-boggling to me. They will be the A's next season, or at least that's what we're told. We don't think they're not going to be the Sacramento A's, though they are theoretically going to play there for the next three seasons. And then again, theoretically, they're going to head to Las Vegas to, I suppose, take on that moniker and be the Las Vegas Athletics. That is the plan for right now, though, you know, you read the headlines and you see these news stories and you can't help but wonder, with all the hurdles that the franchise is going to have to jump heading to Sacramento to a AAA ball club, to a AAA ballpark, I should say, and having to deal with the weather in Sacramento. There's no dome. It's very hot. Day games are a problem. Should they make the playoffs? Will the Players Association be willing to have games there? Would they put up a stink over clubhouses that are or are not permanent structures in a playoff setting? All of those things are interesting questions, potentially upsetting questions, I think, as it regards the future of that particular franchise. And I was listening to a podcast. I think it was the fine folks from the Sox Machine podcast, and maybe it was Jim Margulis talking about this, but Oakland's uniforms have always been so cool. The look has always been great. You know, the Kelly Green uniform, all this other kind of stuff. It's very, I don't know, to me, the Oakland A's have always kind of felt old school, despite the fact that the approach of their general manager, Billy Beane, for like 25 years was as new school as it got. It felt like there was, you know, kind of this, I don't know, royalty aspect to it. Maybe that goes back to Tony La Russa's run with them in the 70s and the multiple championships. And you got, you know, Raleigh Fingers and the mustache that looked like an old pirate ship captain going on. I don't know. There was something old school about looking at that uniform that made me feel like, oh, all right, The A's are playing, you know, whoever they're playing, the White Sox, whatever. This is some stately baseball. This is some, you know, old school, down in the roots, AL stuff. And I think some of that's going to change with the team moving. It always does. And you get used to it eventually. And younger fans won't even remember when the A's were in Oakland, just like I don't remember the A's being in Philadelphia or what have you. But I don't know. The more things change, the more they stay the same, I guess, in all sports, in all industries. And things will be changing for the Oakland A's come next season. Things will be changing for the White Sox going into next year as well. Obviously, at 33 and 115, this roster, we expect, will look a lot different in 2025. There is a new front office, now just over a year in charge of the baseball operations here as well. And White Sox general manager Chris Getz spoke to reporters earlier this week, so some pretty fresh tape here from White Sox general manager Chris Getz that we'll get to on the other side of a quick commercial break. The latest and most important pieces of where this organization is heading get discussed in the next part of White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. We'll be back in just a few here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Cap and Jay Hood, Monday morning at 7, ESPN Chicago.
Sox fans, bring your pup out to the ballpark on Tuesday, September 24th for Dog Day, sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Grab a seat in the outfield and watch the Sox take on the Angels at 6:40 p.m. Limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. A lot of other fun stuff going on here at the ballpark in the last few days of the season. Tons more to get to here on the show, and we'll tell you about all of it in just 10 seconds. We'll pause it here for station identification.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Lineups are out for the White Sox and A's tonight. Game two of this series, 2-0 Athletics. In game number one, the White Sox have lost 15 in a row here at home, looking to snap that streak with Nicky Lopez at the top tonight. Luis Robert Jr. is in center field. Andrew Benintendi, the designated hitter, with Gavin Sheets at first base. That's your 3-4 combo. Brian Ramos gets a start at third. Excited to watch that. Zach DeLoach is in left field this evening. 7, 8, and 9 for the White Sox are Lenin Sosa at second base. Dominic Fletcher in right, and Chucky Robinson will catch. Day game tomorrow for the A's and White Sox. Of course, you figure Corey Lee's probably going to be catching in that day game with Robinson playing tonight. For the A's, Lawrence Butler leads off. He's on a 21-game hitting streak and hitting 8 home runs in those last 21 games, too. He's been really good. Brent Rooker, the DH, hitting second. J.J. Bleda in center field. Shea Langeliers will catch. Seth Brown in left. Zach Geloff at second base. Tyler Soderstrom back from injury at first base. Max Schumann at third base. And Jacob Wilson, the son of Jack Wilson, is at shortstop tonight. Man, did he make a heck of a play at short in last night's ball game. Some good defense, some leather being thrown around from players on both sides. Dominic Fletcher had a very good play in right field, and Luis Robert made two good catches coming in from center. Want to read you the statement that Jerry Reinsdorf, chairman of the White Sox, released prior to earlier this week. I guess it's just earlier this week. And it was after the White Sox had lost their 114th game of the season. So I guess it was just the other day. He released the following. Everyone in this organization is extremely unhappy with the results of this season. That goes without saying. This year has been very painful for all, especially our fans. We did not arrive here overnight, and solutions won't happen overnight either. Going back to last year, we have made difficult decisions and changes to begin building a foundation for future success. What has impressed me is how our players and staff have continued to work and bring a professional attitude to the ballpark each day despite a historically difficult season. No one is happy with the results, but I commend the continued effort. I expect to have more to say at the end of the season. That statement released by the White Sox from Chairman Jerry Reinsdorf after the 114th loss of the season against the Guardians, which was on Wednesday night, off day Thursday, yesterday's ballgame, a 2-0 loss to the Oakland A's. White Sox general manager Chris Getz spoke with reporters on Monday. And this is our first chance to get to and play for you some of this audio. You may have heard some pieces in other places, preferably, hopefully, on the ESPN 1000 flagship station. But if you didn't, Here's a little bit of it here. And listen, this is big stuff. When the general manager talks, we listen because it matters as it regards the future of the organization. Here is part one of two parts. White Sox general manager Chris Getz talking with White Sox beat reporters earlier this week.
No, I was going to start with, we've got Hagan Smith in town. We went to dinner with him last night with his family and his girlfriend and enjoyed spending more time with Hagan and, you know, his support group. I know he's throwing out the first pitch, no pressure, Hagan. But, you know, he certainly should be celebrating. He's a big part of our future. You know, when you take someone with the fifth pick, and he happens to be my first round draft pick as a general manager, it's pretty exciting. And I know he's spending time with some of our major league club. I know Garrett, I'm sure, is going to spend some time with them, and to have two talented lefties in the building of their stature, I think is, you know, exemplifies kind of the direction of our organization. We feel really good about the pitching development and our infrastructure, and we're going to continue to nurture that and, you know, figure out how to get this club better.
It's probably unfair on September 9th to ask you, but I'll do it anyways. You talked about Garrett. I mean, do you see Garrett as a part of your future beyond this year?
Well, you know, for one, you know, we're really proud of what Garrett has accomplished as a starter this year. He's been one of the bright spots of baseball, quite honestly. So, you know, it's not a player that we're actively shopping. Obviously, there's a lot of interest in a Garrett Crochet just because what he can do on the mound. And, you know, we'll wrap up this year, get into the offseason, and kind of go from there. But you look at the long list of arms that we've accumulated both through the draft and trades, and we feel like we're in a pretty healthy spot from a pitching standpoint.
Do you have to look and see, you know, like you've talked about before, about he's a great story, he's had a great year, he's approaching 200 strikeouts in his first year as a starter, but you have him for 2 years of control. If you don't extend him, how does that fit into what you look like as a team?
Sure. I mean, it, the reality of baseball and where we're at as an organization, you need to look at, you know, the types of returns that you could potentially get in trades. And, you know, we need to, you know, weigh, you know, where we're going to be in a year, 2 years. But we also know how talented he is, and he can certainly lead a rotation of with the White Sox or anyone else. So we're going to take advantage of what he's capable of doing as a starter. But also, I think it's wise to see, you know, what the market holds for a Garrett Crochet, to see if we can improve the White Sox for the future.
Is there an interest in Luis Robert? Would you say the same thing with Luis? Same situation?
Yeah, Luis, you know, what he brings to the table, I know this isn't the year that he was hoping to have. He certainly has shown flashes, you know, this year. However, you know, he hasn't been as consistent as he was a year ago. You know, he has brought the defensive, you know, prowess that you know, he brings to the table offensively. You know, I know he's working on being more consistent. We just need to get him back to being Luis Robert, and we'll figure out, you know, what's best for Luis and the White Sox later.
When you talk about Garrett Crochet, besides on the mound, his contract, the fact is he's a leader in that clubhouse. At 25 years old, he's got the pitching staff around him and seems to enjoy that spot. Isn't it hard to find a location player to replace that?
It's not easy to replace. I mean, but you have to start with his talent. That's definitely not an arm that's easy, you know, to come by when it comes to taking someone like that out of the rotation and then plugging someone in. You know, he has really taken on a leadership role. I think culturally, you look at our starters, you can see it in the dugout during games and how they're rooting for each other and they prepare together. I mean, that's what we're looking for. That's what we want. We want to build on that. And that goes with on the hitting front as well. And we need to figure out how to score more points and support some of the arms that we have.
So is there any interest in exploring an extension with Garrett this offseason?
We'll have those conversations with Garrett and his team. You know, that he's got every right to you know, play under the contract he currently has, and if he wants to go into free agency to see what he can do, I mean, that's his right. He's you know, he's earning that. But we'll, you know, the dialogue's still been very strong with Garrett and his group, and we'll continue to talk this offseason.
How much did the RSN situation and the economics of baseball all over, all 30 teams, impact some of the moves you have to make with scouts and letting people go and, you know, having to deal with realities of budgets?
Well, you know, every club has their financial restraints, and, you know, I think that's the beauty of our game in a way, too, where, you know, we're talking about different markets throughout the country, and you want to maximize with, you know, the resources that you have. I know from an infrastructure standpoint, I've said this from the beginning, you know, so much of our focus is the foundation of the organization, whether that be on the international side, the amateur side, player development, and the various areas that make up an organization. And, you know, we're looking for individuals that can do many things, that are very talented, so we can scale the talent that they have and you know, have a far reach, whether it be down at your academy, you know, apply it to every acquisition, the development of our players. So that's really what we're focused on. That's what we've been focused on. We'll continue to do so.
How soon are you looking to have a new head international in place, and then what sort of qualities are you looking for?
Well, we're looking to improve our process. I mean, Marco was here for a year, for years, and he accomplished a lot. And we've got players on our major league club that are a reflection of his work. However, you know, where we are right now, we're in the works of building a new academy. More so focused on the scouting process. It's different than the what you'll see on the amateur side. We needed to make it a little bit more of a comprehensive approach. So our focus is on building out that process, and the leadership will come once our process is built, and we're going to do that from our front office, and then we'll make a decision from there.
So basically you're saying is people that work with you and moving forward and guys that are working with you now might have to wear multiple hats in their job, not just one thing. They might be in charge of more than one, right?
Well, you know, it's not really. We're looking for individuals that can do a lot of different things and understand, you know, what a solid process looks like. And, you know, I think that whether we're, you know, we go through a hiring process to have, you know, certain backgrounds and skill sets to make the White Sox better, that's the focus more so than finding individuals that can do a lot of different things. If we're able to come across someone that we feel like can help in various areas, that makes them attractive. But there's different ways to kind of go about this, but it's really about scaling information, and that's something that we're set out to improve.
Is there a update on Moncada? What's going on with him?
He's going to continue rehabbing in Charlotte. He's been responding well, but, you know, at this point, it's you know, we want to continue to make sure that he's in a good spot and he feels good about where his body's at before we make a decision on bringing him back.
Last time you did a media thing here, you mentioned you're still writing down attributes for a new manager. Are you to the stage of writing down names, asking for interviews or permission or anything like that?
Yeah, we haven't begun the permission process. What we've done is we've built out a process that we feel very good about. Simultaneously, we've been able to collect names through referrals or our own research, and we feel pretty good about the amount of candidates that we have. And then, you know, once we get our season to the finish line, we'll devote more time and begin the interview process.
Is there anything about the process you could tell us, like, he's going to meet with potential candidates, going to meet with three people, then down to two, then down to one. Anything about the process you can tell us?
Yeah, I mean, it's really about, you know, understanding what we feel like is the best fit for the Chicago White Sox and finding the criteria we feel is going to make for a strong decision at the end. You start broad with the search and then eventually work it down to the finalists and make a decision from there.
Is there a timeline?
There's really not a timeline. More than anything, I want to be respectful to other organizations with what they're trying to accomplish. So, and with that being said, we want to finish strong here and finish our season the best that we can. And then, you know, come October, we'll have a little bit more time and be very intentional on the interviews, and then eventually we'll get to the finish line. But in regards to defining the timeline, we're not going to rush into anything. We're going to be as thorough as possible and then make the best decision for the White Sox.
One more question about Mancata, and that is, you've been very respectful of him and he of the White Sox, but there has to be an underlying feeling of frustration on both parts, right, where you're at and how this is ending.
Well, you look at, going into this year, we were banking on, Yoan playing third base and being healthy. His body had something different in mind. And, it's frustrating that we didn't have that on the field regularly for us, because it would have made us more competitive. But he's in Charlotte right now, and he's healthy now, and we'll just kind of take it from there.
Folks might look at
the process with the new manager. How many, is it just a few, several? How many people will be involved in the process?
Different levels of involvement. Our baseball operations group, will certainly, be a large part of building out the criteria and going through the interview process. But, you've got people that are inside the organization and outside the organization that can be of help, whether it be through the referral process or gathering more background information. So I would say it's fairly broad with the involvement. Now at the end of the day, it's going to be my decision. It's going to be the baseball ops decision. We're excited to name the next Chicago White Sox manager.
That's White Sox general manager Chris Getz. There's more. That's only one half of the conversation Getz had with White Sox beat reporters earlier this week. We've got the other half. When we come back from a quick break, I'm Connor McKnight. You got White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Recap the game, Cap and J-Hood, weekday mornings at 7.
White Sox fans, there's still time to win one-of-a-kind experiences this season. Enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win 2025 season tickets. September's winner will receive a 20-game plan for the 2025 season, inclusive of 4 tickets to weekend games. Get the best seats and all the benefits in 2025. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. Been listening to Chris Getz's conversation with White Sox beat reporters from earlier in the week. We have finished part one of the general manager's press availability. We've got part two here. We're going to get through a lot of bullet points on the other side, one of the whole conversation out there, prior to going one by one through the item list that we've got. So here's part two of Chris Getz with White Sox beat reporters earlier this week.
You talk a lot about processes and stuff. Are you kind of coming up with, I don't want to use like a White Sox way type thing, are you coming up with something like that, like a set of processes and kind of things you want this organization to do so it's not changing all the time?
Yeah, so we're definitely looking to, when we talk about creating something that's sustainable, it's more than just, consistently winning at the major league level. Obviously, that's the ultimate goal, but it's also a reflection of a consistent process in all different areas of the organization. So we've been set out to improve every process that exists in this organization. We're going to continue to pour our efforts into our infrastructure so we can make sound decisions and put our players in a position to be successful.
You've mentioned that you're looking for the next manager to be somebody in uniform in another dugout right now. As you've assembled your list of candidates, is that still the track that you guys are on?
Yes. Yeah, that's the target pool. Our target pool is of candidates that are in uniform with other organizations right now.
With Ramos, he's young still, but is there a point you want to just kind of give him a long major league runway to see what he can do? And if so, with Vargas, does that involve one or both of them playing different positions at some point? Then?
Yeah, we'll play around with different ideas to get at-bats for these guys in the big leagues. Obviously, Miguel Vargas and Brian Ramos are a big part of our future, and we may need to get creative. Tonight we've got Brian that's DH, and we've got Miguel at third base. That's a way to get some playing time there. But, most importantly, we want these players to feel like they've accomplished something in a positive manner. And Brian's had a good run at Charlotte here recently. He's going to get some at-bats here tonight, and we'll kind of go from there.
Colson's had a real good run, eight games, I think, maybe even more than that. Does that hot streak change your thoughts at all?
coming here for even a short period of time.
Yeah, we're excited about the, you know, the adjustments and the freedom in his swing right now. You know, he's driving the ball, he's having good at-bats. There seems to be a lot more looseness in his game overall. We're just going to continue to nurture that and kind of go from there.
He's had this job for a year now. How do you look at your minor league system and where it's at right now and where it was a year ago?
You know, we're certainly more competitive. We've got two clubs that are going to be in the playoffs. They've remained competitive even in their respective leagues in the second half. Our farm system, you know, was rising in the public rankings. You know, we're going to look for opportunities to add. But the overall development, we feel pretty good about it. We know that our farm system is a strong indication of what our major league club is going to look like and the success for a major league club. We still have work to do. We feel much stronger about our pitching depth at this point, and we've got some position players that have had some really nice years. Colson, you know, going on a recent hot streak. Caro has had a really solid year. Brooks Baldwin, that's up here now, obviously is off to a hot start, and he's on the IL now, but he's getting stronger, and we look forward to having him back. So there's been some positive strides in the farm. You look at some of the acquisitions we made at the deadline and at the lower minor leagues, and you know, it's pretty exciting when you look at the potential of some of these players.
On a personal level, is it sort of like watching this team, you know, your team sort of come up short like night after night? Is it sort of on a personal level, is it at all tough for you? And then I guess sort of the follow-up is, what gives you the most hope that sort of, right, like that sort of you can watch it now and sort of be more optimistic in the future, and I guess like for fans too?
Sure, no, I mean, I'm a competitor, just like the players on the field, and when you don't win ball games, that eats at you, it's hard. And, you know, we've come up short way more often than we would have liked. However, you look at some of the development of these players and the opportunities they're getting right now, you have to find your wins when you're in a rebuild like we are right now. So, you know, the spirit of our players seems very strong, especially in this clubhouse still, regardless of the struggles that they've been faced with from a wins and loss standpoint. I'm really proud of that. In terms of optimism, we look at the farm system, we look at where our pitching is, we look at the potential of what our rotation looks like for next year and years in the future. And we've got guys in the bullpen right now that are getting opportunities and pitching well. So, you know, it looks like we're in a good spot from a balance standpoint, both for starters and relievers. And now it's about, you know, putting some more runs on the board. We've got young prospects that are rising in the minor leagues on the offensive side. Now we'll be able to blend that with the pitching. So, you know, that makes everyone that's working in the organization optimistic, and hopefully our fans can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Do you have a favorite memory from this year? And then also maybe a least favorite memory from this season?
I'd say my favorite memory is, you know, making the decision to have Garrett Crochet be a starter this year and then naming him the opening day starter. And although we came up short on the opener, you know, he showed the organization and certainly baseball what he's capable of doing. And that's certainly the brightest memory. In terms of the memories that perhaps I want to forget, I can't see that there's one that really stands out. I think that there's a lot to learn from for our players and our staff and personally, and all you can really do right now is apply those learnings for the future.
Does it surprise you? Knew you were taking a step back this year with the rebuild. Does it surprise you that it's gone this far back, that you're, you know, looking at possibly 100 over a record-setting loss total? How do you analyze that?
Sure. I think if you would have told me we were going to end up flirting with a record, I would have been a little surprised. Now, if you would have told me prior to the year that we would have ended up over 100 losses, 105, 110, I wouldn't have been as surprised. So, you know, but this is the cards that we've been dealt at this point. You try to make the best of it, and I think it's an opportunity to embrace the situation that we're in. You know, as someone that grew up in Detroit and saw the Tigers in 2003 with 43 wins, and 3 years later, we're in the World Series. So I view it as, you know, kind of the frustrating part of the story, but I also know that the future's, you know, looking bright. It's going to make it just that much sweeter once we get there.
I think when news comes out of, you know, you guys cutting Pro Scouts as a national question, are they replacing that or are they cutting back? Do you see additions in kind or kind of new staff that you're adding to the front office that you're having an eye to over this offseason?
Yeah, we'll be adding. You know, it's never easy moving on from individuals that, you know, that work in your organization, that have been here for a stretch of time. With that being said, we're looking for ways to improve this for the future. And, you know, we're going to look for individuals that can help build out a process and allow us to go out there and make sound decisions and develop these guys both at the minor leagues and major league level.
You mentioned the fluidity in Colson's swing. How much of this season has kind of been adjusting to becoming a bigger, stronger guy who maybe is not like... maybe not as fluid as he was in the high school, but kind of has adjusted his new body.
Well, he's an athlete that you know, he's certainly maintained his athleticism, and you know, he's gone through his struggles for the first time really in his career, and I think that's really going to bode well for his future. What you don't want to have happen is players come up to the big leagues and struggle for the first time. So you know, he looks like he's a guy that's overcoming those struggles, and he's made some adjustments, and I think that's just a testament and a positive sign for the future for Colson.
What has stood out to you about those first couple of outings for Hagen?
Yeah, Hagen, he certainly hasn't disappointed. You know, he's got big stuff. And, you know, you look at what he can do with his fastball and breaking pitches, and, you know, kind of reminds you of other pitchers that you currently have in the organization and other pitchers across the league that are leading rotation. So, you know, getting to know Hagen more and more and meeting his family, you know, when you look at players and you evaluate players and you get a stronger understanding of their support system, he's well positioned to have a successful major league career. Very confident in that.
I'm sorry. Are you open to the methodology that has existed in the White Sox so many years with bringing top pitchers through the bullpen? Or is that a case-by-case basis as to what you and your people see in his abilities?
Case by case, you know, I am open to bringing future starters in bullpen roles to get acclimated at the major league level, perhaps in shorter stints. And, you know, an example of that is Jairo Iriarte. And, you know, he's gone out there and he's pitched in one inning outings. And, you know, you see the ability that he has and how hyper-mobile that his body is and his delivery and certainly the stuff that goes with it. I think this experience for him is going to be invaluable. We still view him as a long-term starter, but, you know, in the near term, to go out there and get innings in a bullpen and getting, you know, a bullpen type routine, I think is going to bode well for his future to have some of these guys pitch in traffic or go into a game that perhaps they're used to having, you know, a starter routine. So just, you know, make the phone call down to the bullpen. Hey, you know, you've got the sixth or the seventh, I think is healthy for them. And it's only going to help them in the future, regardless of what role they're going to be in long term.
Hey, what's the plan for him the rest of the year? I'm sorry if you guys were already talking about. Is he going to keep going, or are you going to shut him down for the year? What's the
he's finished for the year?
Okay.
You know, I guess his last time throwing a pitch off the mound may be tonight. you know, the first pitch. Prior to the game tonight. So, but hey, I mean, he's had he had his college season, obviously an excellent one, and he pitched well for us. And now, you know, it's time to prepare him for next year.
We know the reasons why you made the trades, but do you look back, especially with Michael Kopech, to see what he's doing with the Dodgers and how well he's been pitching?
Yeah, Michael's obviously a very talented pitcher, and, you know, we've seen that through the years. You know, I'm a huge fan of Michael, and just watching him grow up both as a pitcher and a person is, you know, something that I'm very proud of. Yeah, could he still be in our bullpen and feel good about it? Of course, be able to make these decisions for the long-term health of the organization.
That's White Sox general manager Chris Getz. A lot to get to there. A lot was covered by Chris Getz and White Sox beat reporters in his media session just the other day. We got a ball game tonight as well. White Sox and A's get started at 6:10. It's a 5:30 pregame show. We're going to step to a break and get to work here on White Sox Weekly. You're listening to the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
White Sox Weekly Saturdays on ESPN Chicago.
Sox fans, bring your family to the ballpark with a family pack presented by ExxonMobil. Starting at just $19, each family member gets one ticket, a hot dog, a drink, a bag of chips, plus a cookie. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. That's whitesox.com/family. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. We're taking you up to the pregame show. That starts in a little less than an hour. First pitch at 6:10 here for the White Sox and A's. We just wrapped up part one and part two of Chris Getz's media session. His availability with White Sox beat reporters earlier this week. And there's a lot of things to get to. And I think probably starting with the manager aspect of stuff makes the most sense. Because the larger big picture on the field, player personnel sorts of things have fewer answers now, I think, than the manager does. And even and that's despite the fact that with 2 weeks or so to go, 2 weeks and a day, I guess, to go in the 2024 season, there are still some pretty significant question marks around all of those things. But to reiterate, I'll do it, and Chris Getz did it with talking with White Sox beat reporters earlier this week. No permission process has been started yet, which is to say, or at least when at the time Getz spoke, they've yet to contact other teams for permission to talk to the people that they'd like to interview for the managerial job. That makes some sense. I would imagine those, you know, asks, those emails, those, telegrams. I don't know how you necessarily communicate those. I don't know if there's a formal way that MLB's got to have it done. Maybe it's a fax. Maybe it's a carrier pigeon. Kind of doubt those things. Betting it's an email. Probably just a text. Either way, that permission process has not started yet for the White Sox, or at least hadn't. No timeline yet either, which kind of makes sense too. The two things at work here are, you would imagine that some of the candidates for the White Sox managerial job are going to be on coaching staffs that are headed to the playoffs. And if that's going to be the case, the CBA got changed. I think it was in the last negotiation of CBAs, and if it wasn't, it was two CBAs ago. Either way, it's kind of a tangential point, but you are allowed to interview personnel, to interview staff on off days during the playoffs now. Used to be, I believe that used to be not be the case, that you'd have to wait until the playoffs were over or, you know, I don't know, pack it all in before series started or something like that. Now, you don't necessarily have to do that. There is a preference, as I understand it, by Major League Baseball that announcements not happen, you know, during the World Series. That focus would be taken away from the World Series. I kind of doubt that's the case anymore. I get that in a era before social media, that those kinds of headlines probably needed a little bit more space than the World Series. You know, the World Series wanted a little bit more space in the column inches, I guess, across in newspapers across the country. But nowadays, the social media being what it is and our news cycle being like, it's not even a 24-hour news cycle anymore. It's a 24-minute news cycle. It's just the way of the world. I don't know that mandate necessarily exists. We have seen some announcements as it regards player or managerial staff. I want to say that the Bruce Bochy announcement happened during the World Series a couple of years ago. So perhaps that's, you know, no longer an edict from Major League Baseball and something the White Sox would be able to get done. The other thing that got said or reiterated, I suppose, by White Sox general manager Chris Getz is that the preference or even the goal is to get somebody in uniform with another team right now. Now, I think the obvious caveat, the exception to that would be if Grady Sizemore, interim manager Grady Sizemore, does put together a good stretch of baseball or just has a rapport, an understanding with the other coaches, with the players or anything like that, I would bet that some sort of interview, some sort of conversation happens there. That's usually how things go. And if it's not how things are going to go, it's normally typically said prior to the interim manager being named. And that didn't happen when Grady Sizemore was named interim manager of the White Sox a couple of weeks ago here. So I would think that that's probably the direction things are headed with the White Sox and their managerial hires. I would think that we are probably still a week, maybe even two, to the end of the season before we start hearing some favorite names. In the last couple of cycles, there had been, you know, kind of longtime bench coaches in most cases, in a couple of cases, that were the favorites to be interviewed for a couple of different jobs. You had your Matt Quatraros now with the Royals. You had your Joe Espadas now with the Houston Astros. You had your Tampa Bay Lieutenants, which was Matt Quatraro for a little bit. You had, you know, a couple of veteran dudes being kicked around here. I don't know that that's necessarily the case in this day and age, or I guess in this hiring cycle. One name that has been talked about quite a bit, obviously, is Terry Francona. Whether it be by national reporters or local or talk show hosts or whatever. I mean, it's just natural to think, I wonder if Terry Francona, one of the better managers in baseball here the last 15, 20 years, would be interested in a reunion with the organization. Remember, he was the AA manager at Birmingham. It was a while ago. Michael Jordan was playing baseball then, not basketball. He would return to basketball and, from what I understand, be pretty good at it, even in his second go-around. Despite the fact that he had won three championships in his first, I think he was able to equal the task in his second time through the NBA. Either way, Terry Francona was the manager of the AA Birmingham Barons when Michael Jordan was on that team. So yeah, he's got some connections throughout baseball, does Terry Francona. Health issues have been a thing for Terry over the last handful of seasons, and obviously he's a little bit older now than he was last year, of course. That's how things go. And I think it's a worthwhile question to ask if this White Sox team is on, you know, is this White Sox job, the managerial job, enticing enough for a manager of Terry Francona's stature, right, his place in the game, right, capital G, that he wants to go take hold of a rebuild? You know, is that where he wants to be in his career at this time? I think it's a fair question. Honestly, I think it's a fair question of many managerial candidates who have, put some pelts on the wall, so to speak. Guys who have been there and done that before. To that end, you've got to find, you know, a candidate. If that is the case, you've got to find candidates that you're willing to speculate on a little bit. It becomes a little bit like a prospect-finding game. And that can be difficult for organizations at time, of course. But hopefully, the White Sox, with their connections to both an older generation of baseball managerial candidates and a younger generation of the same, they're able to put together a good quality list. I would imagine that they are. It is the case, one way or the other, that these jobs are highly coveted. And you're going to get applications. You're going to get guys interested in this job. And I think it'll be very curious to see exactly who the White Sox are identifying through reports over the next couple of weeks as their leading candidates, as the favorites, right, early on here before even the interview processes start, that lead us to a little bit of information about the philosophies in Chris Getz's White Sox regime, right? I mean, it's been a long time since the White Sox have had a change at the baseball operations department. It's been a long time since new decision-making and new philosophies have been put in place as they have been in this last year, right? Your Brian Bannister, your Josh Barfield, your Chris Getz, and so on and so forth. So kind of determining exactly what they deem important is going to be done through the actions they take and have taken here over the last year plus. And we're finding out some of those things as it regards the minor leagues, and the development of pitching. We're going to find out more when they hire the manager and when that manager subsequently hires on his coaching staff. 312-332-3776. Want to know what you think about that next process, that manager will hire for the White Sox. Maybe you got a favorite. Love to let you know. Love for you to let us know. When we come back, we'll talk about a couple other bullet points that Chris Guest mentioned in his White Sox media availability. Among them, the Yoan Moncada question, the Colson Montgomery question. We'll talk about that when we come back. We'll also hear from White Sox first-round draft pick Hagen Smith. Had a chance to talk with him earlier in the week. We'll play that for you at 5 o'clock. You got the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Really impressive defense in right field for the White Sox these past 2 months. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly, everybody. I'm Connor McKnight. Hey, head to the ballpark on Thursday, September 26th for Sports Media Day presented by NBC Sports Chicago. Participate in a pregame Q&A session with sports media professionals when you purchase a specially priced ticket. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. I'm excited to be a part of Sports Media Day here at the ballpark again this year. It'll be September 26th, like I just mentioned. Looking forward to seeing you all there. Dominic Fletcher is kind of part of the rising conversation here with the White Sox, right? There have been few and far between silver linings around dark clouds encompassing the 33-115 record with which the White Sox enter play tonight. There are a handful of young ballplayers that have taken the next step in one area of their game or another. What is unfortunate, we can just be honest about it, is that not enough players have taken those steps in all areas of their game, you know, to really provide, thinking about the position player side of things. Obviously, there's the Garrett Crochet and there's the Jonathan Cannon. We're putting the pitching side on one here, the hitting side on another place. Dominic Fletcher has excelled defensively in right field to the point where I think we spent five and a half minutes on last night's postgame show talking about the defensive numbers he's put up and the fact that he will likely get some gold glove votes. He's going to get some love for a gold glove in right field, despite the fact that he's played like 61 games out there. That's how good he's been. And if you think I'm crazy, I get it. Wouldn't be the first day. But still, it's something that's going to be talked about. That's the quality of his play out there in right field. And if you remember back to the beginning of the season, we had Dominic Fletcher on White Sox Weekly shortly after. I think it was like the day after he threw out his second guy on the base paths earlier on in the year. And I asked Dominic then whether he was, you know, I said, hey, it's, you know, it must be really cool to have your first two outfield assists this quickly. It really feels like the other team, this other team, the opposition has the book on you now. They don't seem to be running as much. And I remember Dominic saying, you know, I almost wish I hadn't done that so early because I do want him to run. Like, let it eat. I love to be able to make those throws. That's a big part of my game. Spent a little bit of time kind of finding himself after that, defensively, it seemed. It wasn't thrown to the right base in a couple of situations, had overthrown a cutoff man here or there. I think, you know, it by and large was being a bit too aggressive with what was then, you know, kind of his best tool on the field. He was really searching for offensively, and he'd had a good run here in the last couple of weeks. I think he had like a six-game hit streak or something like that. He was 10 for his last 20. A lot of it going to left field. But Fletcher had, you know, kind of tried to do a little bit too much, it felt like to me, defensively in those, you know, last 2 weeks or so before being optioned back to AAA Charlotte. Spent some time there at Charlotte, got his feet back under him, and he's come back up here, and not only has he been much more judicious with the bases he's throwing to, he has also been really good with his reads out and right. I mean, just the routes he takes are more polished now. They're more efficient now. His ability to go up and get the baseball seems much more reliable than some catches earlier on in the season. His first time up with the White Sox, where he'd get to something in right in a gap or toward the line, and you know, not quite make the play, not finish it off. He'd get there, but not quite finish it off. And I think when Getz talks about finding, you know, those developments on the field and working from inside the organization to get better, Fletcher is as good example, a good an example as any of players that have the capability of doing so. Yes, you'd like to see better numbers offensively, but you got to remember too that the theory of the case going into this season was being better defensively first and getting some better overall play because you were a solid unit defensively. That did not happen for the White Sox in the first 3 months of this season. They missed on that. And I think you can be honest. I think we can be honest about that at this point with the changes that they've made and the defensive numbers that they've registered over the first three and a half months of the season. Now, having watched some of these young players, whether that's a guy like Jake Omaya at short or Dominic Fletcher in right, the gains that Corey Lee has made behind the plate, I think you can make the case that this White Sox defense should be better next season, much, much better next season, much more reliable next season. And that's even with, you know, the question mark that surrounds Luis Robert Jr. and whether or not the franchise is going to make a move regarding this, the young and potential all-star gold glover. You know, Robert has been fantastic defensively in center field. He has absolutely struggled with the bat. And to my mind, that makes it more likely than not that he starts with the White Sox in 2025, but I suppose there's a lot of time between now and when that decision's going to get made. One more notice for you, too. There's still time to take advantage of our summer savings section. It's now extended through the end of the year. Enjoy select lower-level tickets for $10 on all weekday games. Not many of those left, so get them. $15 on all weekend games today and tomorrow. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section. When we come back here from a quick break, Hagen Smith, the fifth overall pick in the draft last year, the big lefty out of Arkansas, and now a White Sox, stopped by the ballpark a few days ago, and I had a chance to speak with him, and he had a chance to meet and greet everybody around the ballpark throughout the first pitch, the whole deal. DJ and I had him in the booth when we were doing the game earlier this week. I want to bring you this conversation. It's the first time we get a chance to play it. I did not let any of the talk shows on ESPN 1000 have it because I am greedy and selfish. I'm kidding. Mostly it's just because Hagen's really good, and I thought you deserved it here on White Sox Weekly. It's a really good conversation about where he's come from and what he's trying to accomplish in short order in the White Sox organization. We'll get to that on the other side. It's White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Sox games, all of them, on the ESPN Chicago app.
White Sox fans, customize your 2025 season with the new 10-ticket all-access pack and get access to opening day and the Crosstown Series against the Cubs starting at only $224. Pick the number of games and seats that work for your schedule. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/flexpack. That's whitesox.com/flexpack. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly, everybody. Going to let you know what we got coming up here in the last half hour of the show in just 10 seconds. We're going to pause it here for station identification.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP, WTBC, HD2 Chicago. A Good Karma Brands radio station.
White Sox first-round pick Hagen Smith is a left-hander out of Arkansas. He's got a big-time fastball and an absolutely nasty slider. He's working on some other pitches as well and made a couple of professional debuts in affiliate ball earlier this season. The outings were good. The strikeouts were plentiful. He didn't throw a whole lot, but that's what pitching an entire college season will do to you. You've only got a couple of outings with your organization left. He'll work with some strength coaches at Arkansas. We'll talk about this during the interview that he likes to get himself ready for his first full spring training go. It is entirely possible, well within the realm of possibility, that Hagen Smith makes his White Sox debut, his MLB debut, in 2025. That's how good and that's how advanced a pitcher he is. I thought, talking to him, that he sounded like a guy and presented himself like a guy who has already made his major league debut, to be quite honest with you. I was really impressed with the maturity and understanding that he has of pitching, and I think you will be too. So, without any further ado, here's a conversation that I had with White Sox first-round pick Hagen Smith earlier this week when Smith made his visit to Guaranteed Rate Field. So, sitting here with first-round pick Hagen Smith on White Sox Weekly. Hagen, appreciate it. Welcome to Chicago. I know you've been here before. Have you crossed some things off the list that you wanted to get done in your new town?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really know what there is to do yet, so still trying to figure that out, but we're just kind of going playing it by ear and try to figure a thing out.
So, you know, your first day at the ballpark, you know, kind of going through the media car wash, which that's the term, that's part of it now for you. I mean, you are the fifth pick. This is part of the gig. How does that all sit with you?
No, it's good. I mean, obviously, this just kind of comes with it. Kind of got exposed to a little bit of Arkansas, just Arkansas being a bigger program, just kind of getting more media attention. But yes, it's obviously more here just being a professional athlete, but yeah, it's been fun so far.
What was it, we talked a little bit in the hallways when we were walking in, what was it about Arkansas that set you off right, and is there a moment there at Arkansas where you go, okay, Hagen, you can do that, like you can make the bigs, you can get there, and it's because of this that happened here at Arkansas?
Yeah, I mean, just what kind of got me there is just the coaches and just the relationships we've built, and obviously the facilities are top-notch, but the relationships was the biggest thing for me. Just Coach Hobbs, Coach Van Horn, Coach Thompson, all of them, just really enjoyed my time with them. And I guess to answer the second part, like the thing that kind of like just made me realize I could be a big leaguer is my freshman year, just my closing out one of the games in the Oklahoma State Regional, just kind of just realizing that I could do it, like just kind of go out there and just do it. So that kind of was nice to do.
Is that your best? I mean, you've had really great games in college. You pitched a little already in affiliated ball. Do you have a best moment on the mound for you? Is it something that we might not look at? I mean, the Oregon State game is one thing, but if it's that, it's that.
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely one of the top ones. But there's just one. I mean, obviously, my freshman year, I kind of it's kind of weird to say, but I gave up the lead. And then the Super Regional, my second day in a row gone, then I came out, and then we ended up walking it off. So, that was just a super fun moment for me, just knowing that my teammates had my back in that moment. And I just always look back at that, and it was super fun just getting the opportunity to go to Omaha.
We hear that all the time from ball players, like, oh, you got to have his back, you got to have his back. Yeah. And, like, in the media, I think we can get jaded about it a little bit. But you're smiling, sitting across from me, like, it means something for that team.
Yeah. No, 100%. I mean, that's kind of just speaks to that team that year. I mean, it was a few years ago, but everybody just had each other's back. I mean, it's kind of cliche to say, but it's just kind of how it was.
You had 8 players from that Arkansas team drafted this year. You were the first one. Do you guys have a group text with all 8 of you? How is that working? Are you still as competitive as ever, knowing you were former teammates and all drafted?
Yeah, no, it's super awesome. We don't have like a group text or anything, but I always try to keep up with my guys. Just made some really good friendships there, and then got to play against one of my buddies in Greenville, Hudson White. He got drafted by the Red Sox, so it was super fun seeing him, just getting to catch up with him.
What was the first taste of affiliate ball like? I know it was, well, you tell me, because here you come off the full load of starting in college, and now it's a different assignment in your first, you know, go as a White Sox member.
Yeah, I mean, it was awesome. It was a little different feel, because after the season ended, I just kept throwing bullpens, just in case I threw like I did this year. So I just wanted to stay ready. But it was super fun to get out there and go. I really wanted to get my feet wet in Pro Bowl, just kind of meet everybody around there in the organization, especially at Winston. And it was super fun just to go out there and throw.
What's the biggest evolution for you, Ben, here? You know, because you mentioned freshman year, you kind of realized, hey, I can, you know, I'm going to be a big leaguer. That's the goal here. The fastball's great. The breaking ball's nasty. Like, you're left-handed. You've got all this kind of stuff. But what's been that step that made you the 5th overall pick, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's just in college, just year by year, just going through each offseason with a specific goal and just kind of just set my mind to it, just like not taking my eyes off of it. For me, it was just command and refining my mechanics, the command came with the mechanics. Just for me, just trying to clean up everything, trying to smooth out my delivery, and ultimately just kind of lower the walk rate down each year.
What's the goal this offseason then? I mean, it's and I'll ask you next, what's the goal for your first professional season, right? Your first full one, but let's deal with the offseason. How do you get it done?
This offseason, I'm going to train at APEC back home and then go back up to Fayetteville a little bit with Hunter Bell, our strength coach there. I mean, he's one of the best guys in the country, if not the best. And just going back with him, he's going to be detailed. I mean, just talking with some of the guys that played pro ball that came back this past year, he has a specific plan for each guy, and just going with him, just could be awesome.
I was reading a little bit. I forget where you gave the interview. I think it was during your last year at Arkansas here. And you had mentioned that you weren't aware prior to Arkansas just how big the weight room is for development, yours specifically or pitchers in general. What was it there that you learned, you know, that you needed to develop more, and how has it helped you pitch?
Yeah, I mean, just knowing how my body works to different workloads in the weight room, I don't want to get nerdy or anything, but...
Feel free. This is a nerd-friendly show.
Me and Coach Bell, really, we talk a lot, and I talk with some of the pitching coaches a lot still at Arkansas, just because they know me so well for the past 3 years. They've seen me develop into what I am now, so always go lean back on them just for stuff, but, you know, my body responds different to some workouts and some different things, so we always call Coach Bell and just kind of ask him what he thinks about stuff, what I should do this offseason. I'm already kind of fired up to get in this offseason and get after it.
What's the self-scouting report? Or I guess for White Sox fans, if they haven't seen you throw quite yet, they're going to look back at some Arkansas tape. They're going to look back. What are they going to see when they turn on your first start at whatever level you're going to be at come spring?
Yeah, first off, it's ultra competitor. I take pride in that, just going out there and being an elite competitor. Obviously, my fastball is pretty good. My slider is pretty good, but I feel like my changeup and cutter have gotten a lot better. It's obviously going to take time, but just throwing in games and affiliate ball and getting those refined would be awesome.
We just had Davis Martin on the show last week, and we talked a lot about his changeup and the, like, how many different versions and grips he's had to go through here since Tommy John surgery. And you know, some guys have kind of that set it and forget it changeup. Some guys have a little bit more of a feel pitch that they've got to work with. Where would you like that to be for you a year from now?
I hope my changeup is my third best pitch. Obviously, my fastball and slider are going to have bursts too. But obviously, I want the changeup to be good. It's been really good in the past. It's just been really inconsistent for me. Just trying to find that grip, or it might not even be a grip, it might just be an eyesight just for me, just that I can do consistently and throw consistently in the zone.
So the White Sox organization starting to feel a little bit like family. I mean, they wanted you at number five. They made that a point.
Yeah, I mean, it's been very, very, very welcoming. Just that's been the biggest thing I've noticed is it seems like everybody wants me here, and I want to be here too. So, I mean, it's been really fun so far.
Hagen, appreciate it. Yeah. Best of luck this offseason.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Hagen Smith, the big lefty out of Arkansas, the first-round pick of the Chicago White Sox in this last year's draft. I think it's fair to expect big things from Smith. The fifth overall pick in the draft is that guy that gets you there. And, you know, given the fact that many believe he was the, if not the, Chase Burner, the other guy, the two best pitchers in the draft, and the White Sox got one of them, you know, we heard from Chris Getz earlier in the show, and he talked a lot about the strength of the system at this point is the pitching. And that's evident, right? I mean, that's absolutely evident. If there were more ready hitters, we would see them here at the big league level, right? Brooks Baldwin is up and injured right now. Brian Ramos has a start at third base tonight. It's not like there aren't those guys, or at least some of them. If there were more, I believe they would also be here. The pitchers have been matriculating through the system. They have been moving up the chain. And, you know, to that end, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're going to talk a little bit about it. Sean Burke is going to get his first big league start tomorrow afternoon against the A's. It's going to go Burke, first big league start, Jonathan Cannon, who's a rookie, and Davis Martin, who is in his second big league season, first since Tommy John surgery. You know, I mean, this is right now a very young rotation up to and including Garrett Crochet, who at 25 years old is the leader of the group, an all-star, and a guy who's probably going to get Cy Young votes at some point in his career, probably really soon. You know, I mean, that's just kind of where things are at. So I think, you know, looking at the strength of this organization, knowing that it's got the pitching development way ahead of where they'd like to be at on the other side of the equation, I think it's fair to wonder if Hagen Smith's ETA, if his first White Sox start isn't, you know, in about a year from now, if he's not taking the turn that Sean Burke is taking tomorrow in late September or perhaps even earlier. That's the kind of talent that the kid possesses. It was fun talking with him, and if you missed that interview or any of the conversation that White Sox general manager Chris Getz had with White Sox beat reporters earlier in the week, it's all available for you on the White Sox Weekly podcast. You can download the ESPN Chicago app. Each and every one of our shows is downloadable right there for you. You want to go back through some of the awesome interviews that we've had the good fortune of getting here on the program, you can go back and listen to those. I think, you know, on the other side of things, we're going to take a quick break here. And before we wrap things up, there's a couple of things I want to do league-wide. The things we'll talk about league-wide, I want to get into. I don't know if you've heard of the Shohei Ohtani fellow, but he's doing something again. The Dodgers themselves have some issues. And we've got to do a congratulations. We have some kudos to pass out. Canapolis, the Cannonballers, will play for a title starting tomorrow. We'll tell you about how they got there. That's all when we come back on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Black and Abdallah, weekdays at 6:30, ESPN Chicago.
We are closing things up here on White Sox Weekly. Just a few minutes left here in the show before we head over to the pregame show and get things underway for the White Sox and A's tonight here at Guaranteed Rate Field. 6:10 start for that ball game. Len and DJ will be right with you at 6 o'clock. You, though, should grab your friends, with their permission, and head to the park for Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. I would bet that you'll get their permission for this. You get one ticket and two beers starting at $19. You must be 21 and over with a valid ID to purchase tickets. Visit whitesox.com/brews. I wanted to wrap up the show here with a couple of final thoughts, I suppose, on the White Sox availability, the availability of White Sox general manager Chris Getz. We'll get to those in a second. Didn't want to go too long in this last segment without giving out congratulations and kudos to the Kannapolis Cannonballers. They beat the River Dogs last night, 2-1 in 11 innings. This baby was scoreless up until the extra. The River Dogs got one in the 11th. The Cannonballers responded for two in the bottom half of the inning. They win and are headed to the championship, the Sally League Championship, the Southern League Championship. That's awesome. It's a ton of fun. The 2024 Carolina League Championship. Apologies all around. I keep on forgetting what league everybody is in now. And despite the fact that I worked in the Carolina League for a year, I spaced in Kannapolis is absolutely in the Carolina League. They will play the Fredericksburg Nationals starting tomorrow night, September 15th, and we'll probably keep you updated on those scores as we get into the post-game show tomorrow, because that's playing for a championship at any level is fun. And the White Sox still have the Birmingham Barons, who have yet to wrap up their regular season, but by virtue of winning the first half are in the playoffs. That's how the minor leagues work. You win the first half of the season, you get a playoff spot. You win the second half, you get another spot, and then you play the playoffs. Two more things from White Sox general manager Chris Getz that I wanted to get to here. And one of them is this. I like the fact, and DJ has pointed this out a number of times, having come up in the bigs in the 80s when this was a lot more popular a thing. The White Sox have a couple of dudes, Jairo Iriarte and now Jake Eater, in the bullpen getting experience. They are both, as I understand it, very much starting pitching prospects who are going to work into the fold at the major league level out of the bullpen. Now, I think this does a couple of different things. One, and maybe most important, is that in the case of Iriarte, and to a lesser extent Eater, but also kind of sort of Eater, it lets you pick the pocket for those pitchers. Iriarte is coming up from AA, and Eater's had his own kind of up and down season at both AA and AAA Charlotte. He's also not all that far removed from some injuries that had kind of put him off the track and has dealt with some command issues. So you can kind of understand why, for those two particular pitchers, finding spots, pockets of the ball game where you can attack some hitters that you think they've got an advantage against, that their stuff plays best against in an opponent's lineup, makes some sense in terms of establishing some confidence at the big league level. Guy like Sean Burke, obviously, seems a little bit different. Guy like Drew Thorpe, guy like Jonathan Cannon, guy like Kai Bush, right? All the guys that we've seen make their debuts essentially as starters. Although I think in the case of Kai Bush, he pitched out of the bullpen first, but that was out of necessity. Then he made his next start. Then it was Cannon. And either way, both guys were scheduled to make starts at the big league level for at least parts of the regular season. I like that the White Sox as an organization are flexible and player-dependent on some of those decisions. I think it's better than having kind of a blanket statement about player development, which you do see in some places. And I think understanding what each player's capabilities and availabilities are, especially as you get down the stretch, is an important thing to try and manage. Jake Eater is up with the White Sox because Matt Foster was placed on the injured list just a couple of days ago. And I really do think that if, you know, Foster hadn't opened up a spot, if an injury hadn't opened up a spot, the White Sox would have seemingly been really comfortable in keeping Eater down at AAA Charlotte for the remainder of their season. And the fact that necessity pushes him up here is twofold, right? One, he earned the promotion. Being on the 40-man roster helps. He also isn't quite ready to take the ball and make a start. And I kind of think the White Sox would find a spot for him to start, given the state of the rotation, right? I mean, listen, mean the world to get Chris Flexen a win here tonight, but if the White Sox had decided that, you know, we'd really like to see Jake Eater take a start here, but that means we've got six guys, I think they'd spread out the rotation a little bit and make it a six-man for one turn and make sure that guy got the start, that Jake Eater got the start. They have not done that, and instead it's going to be out of the bullpen. The other thing I wanted to address was the Colson Montgomery of it all, and it goes along the lines of what we've been saying for a little while here. Colson got hot about a week ago, and is hit fairly well since. Not like you'd hope. Certainly not tearing the cover off the baseball or erasing all of the concerns that the 2024 season has kind of brought up with the White Sox number one prospect in terms of the, on the position player side. It's been an uneven year. However, when you see a guy like Getz, a general manager like Getz, who has been around players who fit this category, not fail in the bigs, not fail until they get to the bigs, and then have to deal with or reinvent themselves or, you know, all that kind of stuff, it matters some. And if you look at a guy like Jackson Churio, now with the Milwaukee Brewers, who struggled mightily for the first 2 months of the season, got it back together, and then gets to run, those struggles matter to players, and developing from those struggles also matter. And Colson has talked a lot about learning to do exactly that. Hopefully, that's what 2024 has been, just a springboard for a really good major league career. You hear the music, that means we got to get up out of here. White Sox pregame show starts in a couple of minutes. Big thanks to Hagan Smith for hanging out with us here on White Sox Weekly. Thanks to Sean Graney, our producer, Brennan Riley, the EP. We'll be back for the White Sox pregame show as the Sox take on the A's at 6:10 tonight. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.